Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Woo-hoo! Yeah!
Hump Day!
Feels like crunch yeah. time.
Yeah! Hump like,
Day!
Crunch time.
What's with the delay? Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah!
Dustin the Great and Country.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
Dustin got a woohoo. I love
it. It's about time.
Hey, it really is about,
it's about time.
Yeah, it is. I'll be honest with you. Equality here in the studio, right?
That's what I'm saying.
All right, we got a great show for you guys tonight. Lots of stuff happening in the poker world as poker starts to open back up throughout the entire country. Lots of cool things are happening. So there has been a tremendous amount of time that has elapsed from the 2020 WPT tournaments that never played out. And those have now been announced and have been scheduled. So that's kind of a fun thing to see.
Oh, really?
And the other thing is it's interesting about how much time has gone by and what that actually, you know, looks like if you are a player who made one of those final tables. So as we know, the World Poker Tour, if you played in an event in one of the big televised events, they would play down to the final six tables, and then there was a delayed amount of time, and then you would come back and you would play you would meet in Las Vegas regardless of where the tournament was played, and you would play out, those final six players would play down for the title. So we had a couple tournaments, which was the 2020 WPT Gardens Poker Championship. There was also the LA Poker Classic and the Borgata Winter Open. Those three events, they never played out the final
that's
table.
Right. I forgot.
And it's funny
because
you forget.
This.
Yeah, you just sort of forget. You're kind of like, oh, yep, WPT 2020, Borgata happened. Like, the event is over, but it's not. You still have these players waiting to play down to the final table. So they have now announced that they have scheduled them. So the 2020 WPT Gardens Championship is scheduled for May 10th. 2020 Borgata is scheduled for May 16th, and the 2020 WPT LA Classic is May 17th. And then following that will be the 2021, so this year's WPT Seminole Hard Rock Poker Showdown. Now, what's interesting about that is that tournament, I believe, is scheduled in April, sometime in April. What I find interesting is that they, in fact, put another time lapse in between playing down to the final table and then actually playing out the final table. So
what do you mean? Now, are these events, you said the Gardens, the LAPC and stuff, did those not take place? Did those take place in 2019 or did those actually take place
the beginning of 2020? They were in the beginning of 2020.
They were in the beginning of 2020.
They were all in the beginning of 2020. So, what I mean by that is, like, okay, remember they would do the November 9, they'd play down, and then they would say, come back in November and play. Well, WPT kind of took over that same thing.
Sure.
You would play, and then you would come back, you know, whatever it was, like 11 weeks or 12 weeks later, and then everybody would meet in Las Vegas, and they would play in the HyperX Sports Arena. And that's where they would finish out the final table. So now they have, now that they have the 2021 Seminole Hard Rock Open, they're still scheduling time before they finish out that tournament. And I thought that that was interesting because, as you see, there's been so much time that passed and there was, it was so problematic for these other tournaments. So, for example, the WPT Gardens Poker Championship, which is scheduled for March 10th, 422 days has gone by since they played down to those six players.
So it's been over a year.
Over a year.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty substantial. And for a lot of things,
right? Crazy. Like,
think about the advantage or disadvantage that shifts when that much time goes by before you play out a final table. I mean, we talk about, like, being able to prepare and prep, you know, if you are coming back even just 11 weeks later. But to come back over a year later to play out this tournament, it's pretty strange. Like, I feel like you're not going to remember anything about the people you were playing with.
Or have you been studying for a year?
Yeah, their game has probably substantially changed.
Yeah, that's a huge, that's a huge thing.
That's a huge thing, right? And it's so much time. And so I wonder what that looks like. And for instance, one of the people that's coming back, the 2020 Gardens that has now had so much time that's passed, one of the six players that's returning is Chance Cornuth. Okay.
Really?
He is the chip leader of the six players coming back for the Gardens tournament. He also, I'm certain, has been studying. We know he played the whole heads-up battle against the Phil Galfond Challenge.
Right.
So he has been playing a lot of poker. He obviously has been putting in lots of hours playing heads-up. He's been putting in his time studying. So does that give him an advantage? And then also, when you look at, you know, he played the Galfond Challenge. Does that give people a lot of information to play against him? Because somebody's going to be playing him heads up. I mean, effectively, let's just say he makes it to heads up. That means if he makes it down to the final two, how much information do you really get to extrapolate from his heads up, from his heads up game? And is that good or bad? And so I just think that the dynamic of the way that the tournament's going to the way it's going to finish six-handed is going to be really interesting.
I agree. I think it's very interesting. And I don't know. I can't find these tournaments right now to find the pay scales. But it's interesting to know that so after, you know, 400-something days, well over a year, I believe they did the same thing as the what the WSOP used to do, which is pay everybody last-place money.
They did. They played everybody sixth-place money.
So somebody's going to come back after all this time and win nothing.
Right, which is weird.
Right.
But it's still basically like an absolute free roll for the worst player at the table. You know, he has a year and some change to prepare.
It's an absolute free roll, right? He can only win
and
money.
And he's already locked up last place money.
Right. But he's probably already spent it also.
Possibly. Yeah. But he's still on a total free roll.
Yeah.
He is on a total free roll. The other piece that's interesting about this is so they were scheduled to play at the Hyperlink, at the HyperX Sports Arena at the Luxor Hotel, right? Which is, that's where they were going
to play.
That is not happening now. They are now playing in the Poker Go studio. And that might be because, if you remember, WPT was sold. So WPT, who was owned by Allied Sports,
owned the Esports Arena. Yeah.
So they're not playing there anymore. Now they're going to play in the Poker Go studio.
It's nice to have this close-knit poker community to where you can go to Maury and the guys over at Poker Go and say, hey, we don't have our esports arena anymore. You think we could work this out and film it in your place? Like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
No sweat.
Yeah, no sweat. We got you.
So 2020 WPT Gardens Poker Championship, they bagged their chips on January 13th of 2020.
Crazy.
And they're coming back to play it out on March 10th. So that's coming up here. What is that? Next week? Next week.
Week from today.
Tuesday or something?
It's a week from today.
Next Wednesday. So there you go. So I feel like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be great poker to watch. And it'll be the first time that we get to see a real live poker tournament since the pandemic has happened in terms of this type of play. So I'm looking forward to that. I feel like I think the production's going to be really great, and I think they're going to make a lot of interesting tweaks and changes to the production just because what they do.
They'll change it around so it suits the WPT brand.
Mm-hmm.
But Poker Go Studio is a great studio. It's a fun place, and I'm sure they'll set it up real nice.
Yeah.
The cool thing about the esports arena was all the spectator area.
Yes.
You know, it was literally an arena. So there was all these seating and places to walk around and, you know, little bars and stuff. It was pretty cool.
The funny thing is as it turns out, that probably wouldn't be allowed now anyway.
Due to the nature of the pandemic.
So it wouldn't. It'd be like a wasted space.
Kick everybody out and film it in the Poker Go studio.
Yeah, it's like a wasted amenity because you're probably not going to be able to use that anymore. So I just thought that was fun. So that's been announced, and it'll be exciting to see all of these 2020 WPT tournaments actually finally wrap up because all of them are pushing into a year having
that's
lapsed.
That's really amazing. I didn't realize it'd been so long.
Yeah. So that's. I feel like that's kind of fun and interesting. Do you guys have a World Poker Tour on the schedule to come back here this year?
We do not have anything scheduled yet.
Okay. Do you anticipate that that might be something that happens? Generally, World Poker Tour, I know, comes in like October.
Sure. Generally, we would have a Deep Stacks around now and then a World Poker Tour in October, but we have not scheduled one yet. We're still hopeful.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's probably really difficult to try to schedule something out so far.
It's very difficult. Also with the World Series of Poker, which is presumed not going to happen in the summer, but may happen in the fall, really sort of changes things around a little bit as to where you want to place your tournaments and what you want to invest in and what kind of series you want to have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my assumption of the World Series of Poker is I don't think they're going to do anything other than what they did last year, but that's a total guess. I have no information on that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that they are going to do something live, but not in the summer.
I'm surprised.
I heard that also.
Yeah.
I don't, and we'll see what happens. I think, you know, I think World Poker Tour is going to come back. Is coming back. They're doing a great job. Everybody, you know, they have an incredible staff and they're doing a good job to make sure everybody's safe and getting people to where they need to be and making sure that they're structuring and scheduling these things at a time where people have the ability to travel and get from point A to point B, because hopefully most of the travel restrictions are, you know, they have been loosened at this point and everybody will be able to make it to.
I just think, you know, the World Series of Poker is kind of a different animal and it's such a huge investment.
Sure.
And a huge amount of time that they take up. And, you know, do they really want to do a toned down version this year? And maybe they do. Maybe it's worth it to them just to do a toned down, shorter version and still have a nice 10K main event with a couple side events here and there and mm-hmm. with satellites live, obviously, in Vegas. Or just do an online and do a couple other hybrid things and then come back with a bang in 2022. I don't know what would be better.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. You know, the one thing is World Series of Poker took away that November 9 and started, you know, saying, okay, we're just going to play it out now. And WPT kind of picked up that model where they created that delay, which now led to these tournaments that didn't end up being finished. Excuse me. But the one piece that I thought was interesting is that they continued to have that model as they come back for tournament play, again, with Seminole Hard Rock.
Will they continue to?
What they are doing. So in April, it's, I believe, Seminole Hard Rock Poker Showdown will conclude May 18th, but they will not play that final table out until, they play it out on May 18th, but it's scheduled in April. So there is a lapse of time.
Oh, the final table is May. I was going to say, I know the tournament is in April.
Yeah, the tournament's in April, so they finished out like the 26th or 27th.
Yeah,
but they're not going to play those final six until May, and they will go to the Poker Go studio. But
interesting.
Will that be something that they continue to do?
I don't know. I mean, obviously they believe in the model. I think it's mm-hmm. a little risky. It's a little bit risky, especially right now. And they're kind of going for it, especially what we saw with the World Series of Poker, where they had two final tables live, one in Europe where somebody didn't make it because mm-hmm. they couldn't travel or didn't want to travel. Mm-hmm. And then the one here locally, or not locally, but in the U.S. and in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody made it all the way there but couldn't play because they tested positive for COVID.
Right. And so that's why I'm saying I'm surprised that they're going to do that again with the Seminole Hard Rock Tournament, because they're already there and in one place. It seems like a bit of a gamble to take that break again. And
spend one more day and get it over with. That's what I think.
Yeah, and expect everybody to get to Vegas, right? So,
for sure.
So now we have two things that are coupling again. So I'm wondering how that will work, and maybe it will be successful and be great. But I know they're in good hands with Matt Savage, who is the tour director for World Poker Tour, and they're doing everything that they can to make sure that it's a safe environment and a good place for people to play and make sure that they can all get there. So we'll be watching that. And so live tournament poker will be back on your TVs coming up here next week. So look forward to that. I did see something about Daniel Negreanu and Phil Hellmuth. Of course, they are always making headlines. So Negreanu bet Phil Hellmuth $400,000 that he couldn't win or beat $25,000 tournaments. So what that looks like is he put up $400,000 to Phil Hellmuth's $200,000, saying that over a sample size of 50 tournaments, and they have to be $25,000 buy-in tournaments, which they are now hosting again at Aria.
Right. Right.
If he plays 50 tournaments, he cannot come out a winner.
Go ahead.
What do you think? I mean, do you feel like that's a...
I think, you know, that's interesting. I mean, obviously...
It's kind of a strange bet.
It's strange. I like the bet. I think it's fun. And I would love to be a part of the bet just for the action and, you know, on Phil's end for the motivation to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure. It makes you, I'm going to play all these tournaments.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do well. You know, I'd like to think I would come out ahead after 50 tournaments. I think, I don't know. The thing about those tournaments at Aria is there are some phenomenal players. But that doesn't mean that, I mean, Phil Hellmuth, obviously, whether you think he's a good player or not, he has the ability to win tournaments.
Of course.
I agree. That's proven. I don't think that it's a good bet on Daniel's part to lay him 2-1.
Uh-huh.
To make the bet is probably okay. Then again, maybe there's a little bit of backstory or a little bit of back end to this where some of the guys who play those high rollers really want Phil Hellmuth and Daniel to play in them.
Uh-huh.
So they said, we'll take a little of the action. Go uh-huh. ahead and give him 2-1. We'll cover a piece of it. We're going to beat him anyway. Who cares?
Well, it's interesting.
Now they get him and maybe Daniel to play those events, which mm-hmm. gets more people to play the sure. events, and they probably think that they're going to beat him. And if not, so what?
Yeah, it's a bit of a marketing Brilliant. Tactic, I feel like, for sure. But yeah. here's the other piece: is you know those tournaments are, you know, they cater to a small group of people.
Sure.
A, because the buy-in is extraordinarily high, and two, the caliber of player is extraordinarily high as well. But I'm wondering how much that has changed from the pandemic. Like, are we going to see 20 people in the event, or are we going to see like 60 people? What it used to be? And
yeah, it's hard to say how many people you're going to see. That's really.
And does
a
that
good
give
question.
Him an advantage, right? Isn't it, does he have an advantage or a disadvantage based on the number of people that are actually in the event?
Oddly, I think Phil would have a bigger advantage with more people in the event, because with more people in the event, there's more of a chance there's some less skilled players.
Yeah,
that he can take advantage of to build some chips to give him some, you know, some fighting power against the more skilled players. I think the smaller the event is, the less the more difficult it would be for Phil Hellmuth.
Well, I'm certain we'll be covering this story as it goes on. So he's got 50 tournaments to play. I'm not sure if there's an allocated amount of time.
Hey, who wants
to
put me in?
Them?
Put me in. I will put me in 50 of these tournaments. I'll come out money ahead.
You will?
Yeah.
All right.
Somebody has to put me in, and I'll bet on it.
Are the odds 2-1, or is it going to be higher?
Even money. Even money's fine.
All right. Even money's fine.
Let's not be ridiculous.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we got lots of tournament play to talk about. We're going to talk about the incorrect way or the proper way to play a flush draw when you're in a tournament. Also, I have a couple fun hands that if we have time, we're going to get to. And, of course, we have giveaways. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great in Country. All right, it sounds like as we were on break, we got a little word in maybe from
the one and only
Matt Savage. So it sounds like we might have a little update on what could potentially be happening with the World Series Poker.
And more importantly, apparently I need a better mask, a sexier mask. So I'll work on that, Matt. I'll work on a sexier mask.
What does that mean? How do you get what does a sexy mask look like?
It's just an actual picture of Jesse's face on the outside of his mask.
Yeah.
You know what I think?
I'll get
one
of those. That was my idea anyway, to get a picture of your face printed on your mask and then wear a mask.
I feel like it would be really fun to do that, but then you guys should like swap masks. So like you have Dustin's face and then you have Jesse's face.
It feels like it would melt my brain. It'd be like, yeah.
What if you and I swapped masks? That would be even funny.
The
face swap.
I think I could rock that beard. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I feel like I could rock it. It's the face swap app. In real time.
Real life face swap.
That's
so what did he say about the WSOP timing?
Matt Savage says looking like maybe late October, November-ish.
Okay.
I'm sure nothing's set in stone yet.
Right.
Sure. That's what he dropped here in the Facebook chat.
I like it.
Like it's hot.
All right. So, you know, first of all, last week we had a nice little fundraising tournament that was quite a wonderful success and a ton of fun. So
that was amazing.
Thank you for all of you who played and that participated and helped me raise money for the Jacksonville Children's Course. It was a lot of fun. If you participated, it was great. And congratulations to Paul Petralia, who, of course, won first place. I feel like he was the chalk to win. So he won, and he won a $1,200
Yeah, the WPT champ comes through.
Yeah, Jacksonville WPT champ comes through. No big surprise. But he won a $1,200 year premium subscription for Jonathan Little's training site, right? So happened to be that I saw an article that he just wrote talking about playing flush draws aggressively and when you're doing it in the wrong spot in a tournament. And I thought that that would be kind of a fun thing to talk about, especially since he has such a great site. And if you're not familiar with it, you're definitely going to want to check it out. So pokercoaching.com is where you can go. You can sign up and have lots of, I mean, he has so much content. I don't know that you could ever get through it in a lifetime.
Unbelievable. Jonathan Little is, he's not a person, right? He's not a person.
He is a machine. So the man is great. But so he wrote an article and he talks about if you're playing in a tournament and you're playing in effective stack size 15 big blinds. So you're deep in the tournament. We're well deep into the tournament. And the average stack size is 15 big blinds.
Small, shallow.
Shallow. You're playing very shallow.
Okay.
And here, the first thing that I thought that was interesting about this is how many people would make a mistake effectively by not even being in the hand. And that was the first part that I want to talk about. So it gets folded around to the small blind. Okay. The small blind raises and he makes it 2.5 big blinds. Now, the big blind has to decide whether he's going to defend or whether he's going to fold. And he looks down and he has the jack six of hearts. So in this moment, before we go any further, what would you do, boss man? Remember, we are playing a big blind anti-structured tournament.
Big blind anti-structure, started the hand with 15 bigs, got, you know, basically two in there. He raises to another 1.5x to call. I'm going to have three or four. I mean, I think the right play is to just literally stuff it. But if you're playing in a tournament where everybody is that shallow, I think maybe you just call.
Dustin, what do you do there?
Where are we in the tournament? Are we?
We're deep. I mean, the effective stack size is 15 bigs. So
sure, like we're in the money.
Shallow.
We're
yeah.
Okay, so
I really think you're supposed to just stuff it in there with that hand against a small blind who could have anything.
I'm probably leaning towards more just a call, playing a little more passively in these spots, you know, especially kind of like Jesse said, if everyone's about 15 big blinds effective and we're to a spot where we could potentially be laddering up.
If it's
like final table ladders, then I think it's different. But if it's like big pay jumps or, you know, like big gaps in players, I think it's a little different. So
yeah, I mean, I think you got to stuff it to put the pressure on somebody because of the ladders. But then again, you know, if the effective stack, if everybody is 15 bigs deep, and that's the average. If you get down to 10 or 9 or even 8, it's okay.
It's okay. It's not that big of a deal.
Right. You still have play left because everybody's that shallow.
How many people do you think fold in that spot?
Too many.
Right.
Yeah,
too many.
I would never consider folding in that spot.
So that's the first piece. And that was one of the things that drew me to the article is because he touches on the spot of why you should call in that spot. And I think that it's really interesting the way that he lays this out. So he talks about due to the big blind ante, right? You only have to call 1.5 big blinds, as the boss man just pointed out. You are in position, right? Remember, you have position because there's only
right,
two of you in
the
hand.
Now.
You are the button effectively. And there you're putting in 1.5 to win 6 effective big blinds. So you only need 25% equity in the hand. So he effectively tells you, he's like, basically, with any two suited cards in almost any hand, you should be calling with.
Yeah, you should be calling there really light, even with only starting
like
the hand.
Virtually 100% of
yeah,
the time.
Not quite 100, but
there's almost no hands that you can fold. Just the really trashy hands like 9-deuce offsuit and 10-3 and stuff
right.
like that.
So he says, so this is what he mentioned. This is what he talked about that. So he says, in fact, the only time you can justify folding, the only time is in a situation if the opponent's 2.5 big blind raising range is incredibly strong. He said, and even then, calling is not bad. So basically, you should just never fold in that spot when you're playing with that type of a stack size. Now, of course, if you're playing deeper, then we're having a different conversation. But remember, a big piece of this conversation is you are playing with 15 big blinds. And I thought that that was really important and interesting. So I know a lot of people are getting back into tournament play, and that's something that I think that you should maybe work on and think about when you're in the big blind. When should you defend and when should you not defend?
It's a huge problem.
It is a huge problem.
You know, in cash games, it's not that big a deal, and it usually never happens because people chop the blinds and stuff like that, and there's more action. But when you're in the big blind and it's frequently folded around to the small blind and they raise, what do you do? You know, that's a big conundrum. Or if the button raises. If the button or the small blind raise, all of a sudden you're put in this weird spot where their range is so wide that you have to make you have to make some good poker decisions. Do you three bet them and bet?
Well, but also since you
call and bet,
but you're also getting such good odds in that spot always.
Yeah, the thing is you're getting odds. The
and you get to close
so
the action,
strong, right?
Unless, you get to close the action, but, sure.
Yeah, unless you raise, but you for the most part you get to close the action.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So it's not it's. That's it. Once you make that call with the 1.5 big blinds, you are seeing the flop. Okay, so the flop comes out, ace-8-4 with the ace-8 of hearts. So you flop a flush draw, okay? Remember, we have jack-6 of hearts. So
what was the flop again? Ace-8-4?
Ace-8-4 with two hearts, the ace-8 of hearts. So the small blind makes a continuation bet of 2.5 big blinds into the 6 big blind pot, right? So a third of the pot size, effectively. At this point, what would you do?
Well, now I'm in a spot where I don't really want to slough off money and continue to put in money with a potential to put myself in a potential where I'm going to call and fold on the turn or the river. So I would go all in.
Dustin?
I mean, you only have about 12 big blinds left based on what we talked about, right? I would just stuff it.
I'm kind of with Jesse on this one. You're going to have the most equity in the hand on the flop. If you wait till the turn to get it in and you brick, you know, your equity is literally going to get cut in half.
Right.
So getting it in on the flop I don't think is the worst thing. But it's such a big raise. You know, he bets 2.5 and you rip it for like 12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a massive – your hand looks exactly like what it is the only problem.
So it's interesting because I kind of felt the same. I was like, you know, I'm a little bit – I'm not as aggressive as you guys, and I'm a little bit more passive, especially when we're playing shallow poker in that particular situation. So I don't know that I would go all in there. I'm probably more prone to call, but that's partly because I'm not as aggressive. Here's what's interesting. Here's what he says to think about. If your opponent, the opponent raised such a small amount from the small blind that it's difficult to know, he probably has a pretty strong premium hand because otherwise he's out of position. If he's making a tiny raise like that, he's enticing you into the pot, right? So that's something to consider and think about. Like if he's trying to just take the pot down, it's much more likely that he's going to make a larger raise to just get you to fold your hand. Because if you only have to call 1.5, he's right. A player should know, hopefully, a good player will know at that point that you effectively cannot fold anything.
Right.
As Jonathan pointed out, right? So with that being said, if you consider that, then you have to think that there's a lot of hands that could hit within his range, right? He could make ace anything.
Ace, yeah. The problem is the ace makes it a weird hand because if he has an ace, obviously he just insta-calls. But if he doesn't have an ace, he just may let anything go. You know, he probably has more aces than you do, but you don't have any, you know, there's no draws. There's nothing you're going to pick up on the turn that's going to give you any extra outs. I mean, you might get lucky and make a pair, but you're basically, your hand is either a flush draw or a bluff.
Right. That's what I was just thinking.
So I don't like putting in money and seeing the turn and then a random card comes off. And then if you have to put more money in, I feel like you're just bleeding, even though, you know, if you just call, you still have maybe 10, you know, 8 to 10 bigs left, and then the turn comes out. Now he, you know, bets another 4 bigs. What do you do there? I mean, you can't, you know what I mean? Now you're just, I feel like you're bleeding, so I'd rather just put it all in.
So he makes a point to say that, you know, you're pretty far behind in the hand. And if you consider it in terms of this, he's bet another 2.5. So he's now, he's committed, he's got 5 big blinds invested. In the pot, yep. Invested already, right? So that's leaving him with 10 big blinds. So the likelihood of him folding any hand that he's connected with is very, very, in fact, it's not happening, right? I disagree with that completely.
His fold equity
is probably very light. Like if he has queens, is he going to fold with an ace on the board? Probably not, because think about it in terms of this. If I'm in the small blind position and I open and I have queens and the flop comes an ace, and you just called out of the big blind, I'm pretty much going to assume you don't have an ace because you probably would have shipped it preflop.
Maybe, yeah, right.
Right, like you're not going to play so passive to just
call. A lot of times people are going to re-raise with any ace in that spot, yes.
Exactly.
That's why I said he has more aces than you do.
Right.
But I still, I don't, I mean, then you got to just fold. I mean, you can't call. Just calling is just bleeding money.
So it's interesting what he says here, That's why I thought it was an interesting conversation, because it's a very common spot that people find themselves in, right?
Yeah.
Where they're
in this spot
where you have this flush draw and you have to figure out what to do when we're playing shallow and making sure that you're not making a mistake. So he says, most players believe they should raise with their draws here because playing aggressively gives you two ways to win the pot. Either
Correct.
They fold or you make your draw and you win a big pot.
Right.
Those are the two things that could happen. But in this situation, right, doing that, in this situation, you're better off calling, because if you make nothing on the turn, if you don't turn your flush, you can fold. Also, if you don't turn your flush and the guy checks, you get to check back and you get to see the river card. So by stuffing it in, you're putting your tournament life on the line and you have to see two more cards, right? That's it. You have no more play left.
You're right.
If you call, it opens up the ability for you to do a couple things. You can either turn your hand into a semi-bluffing hand. You can improve your hand on the turn. And you also keep yourself from going broke in the tournament.
Right, but what if it goes check, check on the turn, and then what if he checks you on the river?
Now you can turn your hand into a semi-bluffing hand.
And how much are you going to bet?
I mean, you could probably stuff it there. I mean, I suppose it depends. That's
right.
Like, that's probably what I would do, right? If he raises... bets the flop, continues, and then checks. He probably doesn't have a hand he can call with on the river. So that would be, I feel like you're better off putting
Maybe.
Your chips in on the river and winning the hand than you are stuffing it on the flop and enticing him to call.
I think if he has a hand he's going to fold on the river, it's the same hand he'll fold on the flop.
I don't agree with that.
So he's not folding two queens on the river the same way he's not folding two queens on the flop. He goes check, check on the turn, and you stuff it on the river, he's not going to fold two queens.
No, but he might bet. The likelihood of him betting again would be strong.
Then you just fold, right?
And you'd fold at that point. But what I'm saying is, by not going all in there, you're stopping several things from happening. You're not eliminating yourself from the tournament. Number one, you're still, as you pointed out, in a fairly good spot because you have 12 big blinds left. In a 15 big blind effective stack size tournament, so you're not in a terrible position.
It's weird because everybody's so shallow, also, but
and that's a big piece, right? Is to remember. Now, again,
the other thing that's weird is the guy who raised it out of the small blind. His range doesn't have to include an ace, right? His range can be anything, but when the ace comes, he almost has to bet because he has to represent that ace because he raised preflop out of the small blind.
Of course,
but it doesn't mean he has to have the ace to bet.
But it also means that he's not necessarily going to triple barrel in a situation trying to represent an ace when you're playing 15 big blinds deep because you don't have enough chips to make those types of plays.
Right, but I just feel like you get stuck in a spot where you bleed off a few bets and then you have to check down the river and lose to King Jack.
Or you can turn your hand into the semi-bluff and stuff it on the river and get him to fold King Jack.
Yeah. Which he would have folded on the flop if he stuffed it.
Perhaps.
But maybe you don't have to. You just...
But he also might have called if he had the hand like King 8, right? Like, what if he has King 8 and you stuff it on the flop and he's like, yeah, whatever, and he calls?
Well, he's calling with that no matter what.
He probably is not going to call with King 8 on the river if you stuff it on the river.
If he goes check, check, and check, he's going to call with King 8.
Perhaps.
I think the check, check turn is what is the deciding factor. If the turn goes check, check, I think he's going to look you up a lot lighter on the river.
Any pair, he's calling.
Yeah, I think I tend to see that more often than not. You know, they go, oh, what kind of hands does he check on the river? I can call with second pair here. I can call with third pair here.
I think if you only call on the flop, you have to be prepared to fold the turn.
Yes, you have to be prepared to fold. If your hand doesn't improve on the turn, then you fold.
And then you 100%. Have to decide on the river if he has absolutely nothing. If it's checked, you're betting on a pure bluff because you have to assume you're going to get called by everything.
Well, I thought it was interesting. The guy does go all in. He does make his flush. That's the way that the hand runs out.
That's the way I play right there. I go all in and make my flush.
He goes all in. He makes his flush. And then Jonathan says, hopefully, that he doesn't take that and think that that's what he's supposed to do. Because evidently, this is a huge amateur mistake that lots of people make stuffing. With stuffing with those flush draws when you're playing very shallow. Again, if you're playing deep, we're having a different conversation. So remember, it is playing shallow that makes that the key. All right, we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, we got a $50 tournament voucher that we're going to give away because we're talking about all this tournament play and lots of tournaments coming up here in Jacksonville to play. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country. All right, so we've been talking a little bit about the right way to play a flush draw, the wrong way to play a flush draw. Obviously, the boss man is always playing it correctly.
Obviously, I play it wrong. Tell Jonathan Little to come down here and say that.
Say that my face.
I love Jonathan Little. I think he's great.
No, he is really great, and he's very smart. It was kind of a fun, interesting
situation. It is. It's
situation.
A very fun hand because, you know, every aspect of that hand makes it difficult and interesting. You know, the fact that everybody's effectively 15 bigs really makes it more about preservation than just stuffing it in. And, you know, the small raise out of the small blind, everybody always wants to raise out of the small blind when it's folded around to them, which is frequently going to be a mistake because you're out of position against one other player. But the little, you know, just the 1x raise or whatever, 1.5x raise, is inviting somebody to call, which means, I mean, hopefully you have a big hand. But I still think that's a bad raise. It's too inviting, and if your hand is that good, you need to get a little more value out of it, not just let any random hand see the flop. So I don't like that.
Here's something that I want to bring up. When was the last time you played a poker tournament? Like a live poker tournament?
A live, real poker tournament with real people.
Playing for money. Playing for actual money where it's, you know, a real poker tournament.
World Series of Poker Horse Tournament 2019. And I took 16th, by the way.
Which was in like June-ish, summer-ish of 19. So it's been
July.
So it's been a year.
It was during the main event.
19 months,
something like that.
Yeah, almost 2 years, right, since you played. It's been a long time since a lot of people have played tournament poker because it hasn't been around. But for people that have been in a place where they've been able to play, they have continued to play, continued to practice, and they are sharp in terms of playing in a tournament.
Sure.
If you don't play for a while, you get rusty. It's like playing golf or anything else.
You definitely get rusty.
It is a sport.
I totally agree.
You have to be in the zone. You have to be practicing. You have to be going through these drills. You have to put yourself in the situations. Otherwise, you make the mistakes. And mistakes that you know immediately after you've done it, you're like, why did I do that? That was a mistake. I know better than to do that, but you haven't been conditioned in so long.
Yeah, it would take a little while for me to refine my comfort zone in any kind of tournament right now.
And to adjust and to play properly.
I can't wait.
To play,
Sure.
Perfect poker, if you will. So here's my next question. Well, I'm going to circle back to what we were saying in the beginning of the show, talking about the WPT table, final tables that are coming back. That's been over a year. There are so many people that have been playing and conditioning, whether you live in a place that either poker is open for you, right? Or if you live in a place where it's legal to play online, those people are playing. They're improving.
Right.
They're not rusty. They're in the game. They're ready. So what could you do to prepare for that if you're in a spot where you haven't played a lot of tournament poker? And the reason I ask that is, as you guys at Best Bet are unrolling lots of tournament schedules, right? You guys had a very successful Winter Open. We have the
Spring Series coming up.
We have the 1010XL main event coming up. So we see lots of tournament poker that's back on the schedule and people coming back into play. And if you've been in a spot where you maybe haven't had the opportunity to come into the room, maybe it hasn't been safe, or maybe whatever the reason is, what can we do to recondition our brains to be able to play good tournament poker, solid tournament poker. What are some things that you think that you could advise somebody to do to be prepared for this next tournament that's coming up?
I mean, I think, you know, similar things that we've talked about in the past, using sites like Jonathan Little's Poker Coaching, using Bart Hansen's Crush Live Poker, and using the advanced poker training that we had Steve Bly on here recently. Using sites like that to just keep yourself sharp, and keep your mind into it. Watch the live streams. You know, we've been doing live streams three times a week, and they are great representation of true poker. You know, we don't have a lot of tournaments on the live stream.
I was going to say, when was the last time you had a tournament live streamed?
We will again, but we had our tournament live stream when we had the Winter Series.
Okay.
Yep. And we'll do that again for the Spring Series, but, you know, watch some live streams. Go back and watch the old live streams of the tournaments.
How much do you think poker has really changed and evolved for people that haven't been in? And it's because it seems like, it could be that much, but there's a lot of time that's gone by. So people have been studying and changing their games so that they can try to come in a place where they have an advantage over other people that maybe weren't studying, or maybe try to find a way to say, hey, you know, that poker boom initially happened. Everybody played one way, and then the entire style of poker changed completely. And I feel like we're going to see more of that happen again now that people are starting to come back and they've been studying off the felt and in a place where they're finding ways to be able to beat the old strategical play that we knew poker, you know, in the early days of 2020.
Well, here's the truth. Yes, some people have been studying. Has poker changed in the past year since COVID-20? No.
Strategic based stuff. You don't think anything?
No, I don't think there's been any evolution, any big thing, any big new change in people's play. I do think people want to play poker now, and not just the people that were playing before. I think there's going to be a little bit of a boom. A lot of people are coming out, and they're ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they're going to come out of the gate playing their perfect A game. I think people are going to come out ready to play loose, fire away, have a good time, and gamble, and come out for the recreation and the sport of it, and to have a good time. I don't think that everybody's been studying in their basement for a year, coming out ready to you know, be stone cold killers on the table. They're coming to gamble.
So effectively, I mean, I feel like what you're saying then is, yeah, it's a great time to play. And if you're coming back, there's no reason to be afraid of that, right? There's no reason to be concerned or
the games are great right now.
I haven't played. I'm too rusty. I don't think I can jump back in the ring in the capacity that I once did. I don't know that I could jump into that tournament that I normally would have played and felt comfortable. I think that everybody's comfort level should be pretty much about the same. Right.
I agree. I mean, except for the half a dozen people that spent the year grinding away in the labs online and honing their skill, everybody else has just been, you know, pent up, ready to go.
Ready to fire away.
Ready to get back on the table.
Building their bankrolls.
If those guys weren't studying live poker dynamics, though, it's not good. Like, live poker is a whole different animal.
Sure.
If you're studying, like, theoretically correct, top-notch, top-level stuff, and then you go try to apply it to your local 2-2 game, you're going to leave money on the table.
Yeah.
But unless those guys are studying like live table dynamics, watching live streams and stuff like that, they're going to be way on left field. I think the games are splashier than ever.
They are. The games are really good right now, and I anticipate that to be the case for the foreseeable future as things open up across the country for the next basically 18 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
Juicy
games ahead. All right. On that note, as we've talked about, $50 tournament voucher. Let's do that right now. 641-1010. 641-1010 is the phone number here. Give us a call. We will take the fifth caller right now. We'll give you a $50 tournament voucher that you can use at either location, whether you're Best Bet Jacksonville or Best Bet Orange Park. You can apply it to any tournament, whether it's a daily tournament, whether it's a higher valued tournament. You can use it to play a satellite, anything at all, to get yourself ready to come into this spring series. We're going to take a break while country's doing that. When we come back, we'll talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, wrapping up the program. All right, Des, we've been talking a lot about tournaments. Tournament play is back. It is hotter than ever, and the Spring Series is coming up here, kicking off March 18th. You guys have 11 total events in the series. This is going to be a really great series. It's definitely not one that you want to miss. The main event, Boss Man, tell them about the main event, $2,500
buy-in. $2,500
buy-in,
and it is structured exactly the same as our 2K buy-in last time for the winter series. We just decided to make it a little bit bigger. So it's $2,500 buy-in. Day 1A is a Friday, March 26th at noon. Day 1B, Saturday, March 27th at noon. Finish it out Sunday on the 28th. It will be it's two long days of play. But it's a great event. We will live stream the final table on Best Bet Live.
Nice. And March 18th is event number one, $560 buy-in, no limit hold'em event. There are satellites going on right now in Jacksonville, $120 satellites. Remember, you could use your tournament vouchers for that. Play satellites, get into these nice and cheap. And, of course, if you are a cash player, Jacksonville or Orange Park, either place today from now through midnight, $1,200 high hands every 60 minutes. At both locations. So big days, big cash promotions going out at both properties today through midnight. And then, of course, throughout the weekend, both Jacksonville and Orange Park have nice high hands that are going on as well. $500 high hands over in Jacksonville, $300 and $400 high hands over in Orange Park. You can get all your information at bestbetjacks.com. That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't go anywhere. End of the night with Rick Ballew is coming up next. For Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.